Hey, everybody, welcome to another edition of the Wake Up Late with Dougie Show. I am your host, Dougie Almeida, coming to you live from Simpsonville, South Carolina, where I'm getting an accent and blending in. So just want to say hello to everybody. We have a great show, first of all. My good friend Jeffrey Gurin is going to be joining us today, who's been a regular on the show. A new comedian who's just doing great, Vian Pampachan. Pampachan is going to be with us. We're all professional comics. We're all, not just professional comics, but we're all professionals who have like our own line of work and life study and all kinds of stuff. And we also do jokes. It's kind of, you know, why would somebody? Anyway, we're going to talk about that today. We got some funny stories. Without further ado, let me bring up Jeffrey Gurian and Vian Pampachan. What's up, fellas?
Hey, Dougie. Good to be on with you, man. I'm glad to see you, Dougie. It's been too long.
Absolutely.
Nice to see you.
I know. And Vian, who we spent a little time at the World Series of Comedy at the main event this past year, and the year before. Actually, we were the last 2 years.
Yeah, good to see you, Dougie. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I said how we're professional, and you were talking about technology, Jeffrey. And you know, I'm not happy about technology either. You know, first of all, my wife has me on the iPhone Finder. You know, so everywhere I go now, you know. But now if I want to go to an Asian massage parlor, it's got to be next to a Planet Fitness or a Home Depot. You know what I mean? My life is being interrupted. And now we have this, with the new car insurance, we have this new technology that you turn it on your phone. So it tells you how you're driving. And, my wife's rubbing it in because she's like, stereotype Asian driver. You know, she's number one. She's number one in the family right now. And I'm number two on the driving. So, she's been rubbing that in my face. So. Yeah, technology is.
So it ranks how good of a driver you are?
What was that one more time, Vian?
You're actually.
They rank you?
We're talking at the same time. Go ahead, Vian.
Yeah, Vian.
It gives you a score, like how good of a driver you are?
Yeah, it ranks like your braking, like your acceleration, and like nighttime driving and stuff like that. And my wife will mess with me too. We'll be in the car when I'm driving. She's like, "Oh, I forgot turn here. Stop!" You know, I'm like, "You're just messing with me. You're sabotaging me." But if you for 90 days, and if you do it, it all goes well. You could save a few hundred bucks on your car insurance. So,
what I want to know is why you're going to an Asian massage parlor when you have that at home. Your own home could be an Asian massage parlor, right? You don't have to go anywhere. You could save gas. Gas is $5 a gallon now. Oh, no. Stay home.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I do have Asian at home, but she does not massage.
No massage.
Maybe she's waiting for a tip.
Maybe she's waiting for a tip, Dougie. You got to try the tip thing.
I have to put a jar on the counter. Vian?
Yeah, you know, it's always a little extra at the end. You know that.
I feel like there's too much judging us already in society. Like we get judged by our wives, we get judged by our friends on social media. Like I don't like the driving app, like judging your driving. I had a car, it was a luxury car, right? And I'm driving and I might've been texting or something, I'll admit, I'll confess. And I wasn't driving well, I was a little bit distracted, but it was in the middle of the night. So this car tries to guess what I'm doing. The car thought I was drunk. Or something. And it actually came up with a little thing that said, take a break. I was like, I don't work for you. You know, like your job is to shut up and do what I tell you to do. I don't need you judging me. You know, I don't think we need this. I feel like it's a line that we cross and now we're gonna have to sort of dial back somehow before Skynet.
So you're kind of worried about this is
Skynet.
This is the beginning of artificial intelligence machine taking over man, right?
It's exactly what.
I mean, they have us with our navigation. I don't know about you, but if I want to be man versus wild, I'll just turn my navigation off and try to remember how to get somewhere just on memory and not use my navigation. Right? I mean,
wait, it also annoys me that the thing guesses where you're going to go. Like I'm about to put in my navigation. And it's like, oh, this is the club you're normally at. I'm like, I don't want you to know that, you know, what if it starts plugging in your massage parlors when you're starting to go somewhere, You know, you don't want your wife getting in your car and be like, Dougie normally goes to this massage parlor today. I don't want that.
Yeah. That could happen. I've seen that happen. And I remember when phones used to announce names, you know, and remember like if the phones had the technology, it would tell you who's calling, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, all of a sudden my phone's ringing. It says what, Jeff?
Secret lover number one.
Aren't you referring to caller ID?
Yes, but like some of these, I had a cell phone that would announce it, like, you know, tell you that way if it's laying on the floor in the car or something, you know. But it's embarrassing when you're with your girlfriend and it says, sexy stripper calling, sexy stripper calling.
Exactly.
So, so technology is not where I like to be. Now, you know, I thought this was interesting. Jeffrey is a dentist. You're a doctor. I'm a financial advisor. We are comedians that have professional...
Dentists are doctors.
Yes, but I thought I would be more specific.
Okay.
you guys are doctors, and I'm a fiduciary. And, you know, it's amazing how we like you have this profession, but at the same time, the profession of stand-up comedy. And people always ask me, like, how do you do both? Do they interfere with each other, you know? So I couldn't think of two better people to ask this question of. Jeffrey, how have you balanced the comedy and that professional world?
Well, you know, I never let it interfere. As a matter of fact, my patients used to say to me, are you sure you're in comedy because you're so serious? My specialty was cosmetic dentistry. And I don't think people want to go to a doctor who's fooling around. I was very serious in the office. I had pictures on the wall of all the famous comedians that I worked with. So people knew, and a lot of times TV shows would come to my office to film me while I was working on people. So people knew, but I stay very serious because I never ever wanted a patient to think that I ever took it anything less than being very serious. It's a great honor when people come to you to be taken care of. And they don't want to hear jokes. You know, I dislocated my shoulder. It was the worst pain I ever had up till that point. And I called my doctor, and he thought that he should make a joke about it. And he said to me, don't make a habit of this. Well, I was doubled over in pain. My arm was hanging. And after I got better, when I went to his office, I said to him, you know, somebody must have told you to tell jokes to your patients, but you're supposed to tell them jokes when they feel better, not when they're in excruciating pain. You know, some doctors are like schmucks. They have a very bad personality, and they don't know when to joke and when to be serious. So again, for me, people knew what I did because of the pictures on the wall. But when I was there, I created an atmosphere of humor. That's what I will say. And yeah. I created an atmosphere, but it wasn't because I was telling jokes, because I think it would be terrible for a doctor to be telling jokes to his patients. That's my personal opinion. When people come, they want to feel safe. They want to feel comfortable. They want to know that you care about them. And what I do on the outside has nothing to do with that. If the only people I'm performing to are my patients, then I'm in trouble, right? I save the jokes. I save the jokes for the audience, not for the captive audience. The patients are a captive audience. So Vian, would
you say that you know, the comedy has maybe helped your bedside manner, or maybe?
Yeah. Well, I agree with Jeffrey. When I'm at work, I'm at work. When I'm off, I'm off. So I'm not like goofy at work. You know, people will look me up and expect me to be like goofy and like Patch Adams telling jokes, but I'm actually very serious. I don't think that's a place for it either. When I'm in the club, then I kind of switch off and become the comedian. I think it is a little bit distracting and weird to just be goofy at work. I mean, you're trying to earn these people's trust and you know, sometimes you have to talk to them through some serious stuff. I think the jokes soften the blow. Sometimes, you know, it can ease some tension sometimes if it's something that not too serious, to show kind of a human side. But yeah, I'm Dr. Pomacham when I'm at work. And then when I'm on stage, I'm being the comic doc.
Yeah. I'm writing a book, and one of the books is The Importance of Being Likable. Like, as the financial planning guy, as a professional, I didn't have an Ivy League degree or anything like that. But after sitting down the use of humor and some things like that were good enough to win the client over. Jeffrey, do we have you still? Are you still moving? I got nervous. I thought you froze.
You know, what's interesting is that in my comedy, I never talk about my other profession. I never talk about being a doctor. I think I tried many years ago doing some dental jokes. It didn't go over as well. And it's funny because everybody likes to laugh about going to the dentist. Everybody likes to joke about it because people have so many fears of going to the dentist. But I never talk about it. So people were surprised. Even when I was writing for Joan Rivers, she didn't know, you know, and I thought she knew because we had met at the Friars Club. And I was the main writer for the Friars Roast for 12 years. So she had heard me and she contacted me and asked if I would write for her. And I thought she knew because she invited me to her home to meet with her. And most writers don't get invited to the star's home. So I thought she knew. So I get to her house and the doorman says to me, "You'll have to sit and wait for a few minutes because she just sprained her ankle and she's in a lot of pain." And I thought to myself, this is great. I can write her a prescription for painkillers and I'll be a hero and she'll want to hire me, right? So they finally let me upstairs. I go upstairs and there's a group of people there like who work with her, and she introduces me to everyone as Mr. Gurian. So I realized that she didn't know. So now in my office, my nurse had strict instructions, never interrupt me when I'm working with a patient unless it's for show business. So she would come into the room and she'd say, like, "Dr. Rivers is on the phone, Dr. Lewis is calling," you know. The only one that nobody believed was Dr. Dangerfield. Nobody ever believed that there was a doctor. So she calls me out and she says, "Dr. Rivers is on the phone." And Joan calls me and she's in Las Vegas. And one of the TV shows had just done a story about me and her assistant must have seen it. So she said to me, "What do you do during the day?" And I said, "I work." And she said, "Well, what exactly do you do?" And I knew she knew. So I said, "Is this concerning the vicious rumor going around that I'm a dentist?" I said, "You know, I've heard of accusing people of a lot of things, but that's really low." And she's like, "Why didn't you tell me?" And I was like, "Because in show business, no one hires you because you're a dentist. They hire you in spite of the fact. It's not exactly a prerequisite to be a doctor, to be in comedy, you know? Yeah. I could have saved myself a lot of money and a lot of trouble, but it's a crazy thing." So I never used to tell people. And my friends would be like, "You're the only guy I know who's embarrassed to be a doctor. You don't tell anybody." Right? Because it's not pertinent. I never wanted to look like a novelty. Like on the Ed Sullivan show, they had a plate spinner, a knife throwing act, you know, he fixes teeth, he does jokes. I didn't want to be that guy. I wanted to be taken seriously in the comedy world. So I never told people, you know, and it came out eventually because I got a lot of press. So it came out, but it's not something that I tried to detach and treat them separately.
Yeah.
You know,
have you ever had a patient who didn't, was not happy with the fact that like this, I can't work. Have you work on me if you're a comic?
No, actually, most of them think it's really cool. Most of them have seen my YouTube clips and enjoy the humor, and they like that I have a human side. I think it makes you more likable, more relatable. And I do bring, I'm different in that way. I do bring my work into my humor. I mean, I don't name any names. I don't violate HIPAA, but I do joke about just the funny things that we encounter. The one patient, it wasn't even a patient. You know, we have these sort of like armchair patient advocates we run into sometimes. It's always like a distant relative who decides that they know more than you, who argues with your treatment plan. I had one patient who was totally fine with me. His like distant friend's uncle's aunt's relative or something came and was like, "Well, we're a little bit concerned that you're a stand-up comedian." And I was like, "Well, what hobbies are acceptable to you? You know, I have friends
who coins and stamps.
Send you to them. I have a guy who carves wooden ducks. I can set you up with him. I have a guy who likes to womanize and drink. Would that be a better?" And she didn't have an answer for that. You know, like my comedy takes the place of other addictive habits that other people do. I mean, there's doctors who golf. That's worse. That's a worse affliction than alcoholism. You know, I've got friends who you know, sale. I mean, it takes the same amount of time. It arguably takes less time, so it doesn't interfere with my work. And it makes me sharper than someone who might want to joust with me about my qualifications. So yeah. I won that argument. That guy stole my patient.
I think that's great because, you know, I, as a fiduciary, I have to do it as one of my outside business activities, one of my OBAs. I have to list it as a financial advisor. This is what I do, so it doesn't conflict in any way, right? And like Jeffrey said, like, I don't make jokes about the financial world because, like, that's a different world to me. I don't even want them to come together for me, you know what I mean, mm-hmm. on it. But it's funny you say that about that because I've had somebody do, like, I was referred to somebody, and I guess they went onto LinkedIn, you know what I mean? And they pull up, and I don't advertise my financial planning. It's all word of mouth, you know, and referral only. So she goes in there and she sees this. So she canceled our next meeting. I'm like, why'd you, we had a great first meeting. What happened? She's like, well, I don't know. And so I realized, because LinkedIn tells you, oh, somebody from so-and-so looked at your profile, you know, like mm-hmm. Whatever. Mm-hmm. I go, oh, I bet that was her. And I asked her, I called her back. I go, did you not want to meet with me because I do stand-up comedy on the side? You know what I mean? And you're right. It's like, listen, I could be doing 1,000 other things, but you know, me going. Now, what's good about it, though, is that at least if they pull up your clips, there's nothing really controversial in there because you're a clean comic. You know what I mean? You work, you know, like, you know, it's like you're doing edgy, you know, humor that somebody might go, hey, I don't know if I want my doctor to be telling that joke.
I'm years definitely ago, not talking about.
Well, hold ago, on, one more time. One more time, Vian. I want to hear him once because we have a overlap. What did you just say about that?
I don't talk about how I show up drunk in the OR. That's definitely not my brand. You know, hungover at work. That those jokes don't fly. So I do fly sort of in the same.
Years ago, I had an interesting experience. I was on the radio with Jackie Mason. He was filling in for a guy named Bob Graham. And it was a national show. And Paul Provenza was on the show with me. I think there were a couple of other comics. And Paul was starring in a show called Only Kidding at the time. It was an off-Broadway show. And he had chipped a tooth. He had a drink from a bottle on stage. And he brought it up too fast and he chipped his tooth. And he happened to mention it on the show. So Jackie said to him, why don't you go to Jeffrey to have it fixed? And he said, why would I go to a comedy writer to have my tooth fixed? Because I didn't tell anybody. And he wound up coming to my office and I fixed his tooth. And he went back on stage that night and it was great. It was fine. And it lasted for many, many years. But it was one of the few times that I combined the two things that I do. But most of the time, I kept it to myself.
Yeah, that's awesome. Hey, you know, comedy's dealt with a lot of challenges, right? We had COVID, we had shutdowns, all kinds of things. Now we have a war. You know, eventually inflation, if prices keep going up, you know, do you guys worry that maybe people aren't going to want to go see a show because they're paying $10 a gallon?
Yeah. Look, you know, I was producing shows at the Cutting Room in New York over the summer and I stopped. I'm going to wait until the spring and see what happens. Especially with COVID, it's very hard to get an audience. I was getting over 100 people at each show, which was great. And I had amazing comedians, all from late night TV. But people were concerned about coming out. At the time, they were requiring you to wear a mask at the show. And it was a dinner show. So you could take off your mask to eat. But of course, that makes no sense. You walk in with your mask, then you take it right off to eat and drink, you know. And then I decided to wait until this spring and see what happens before I produce more shows.
Yeah.
You know, things are crazy.
Well, hopefully the price of the tickets and, you know, hopefully that there's so much misery going on out there that we got to come and have a laugh. You know what I mean?
That's what we were saying. People need to laugh, man. You know, it is the best medicine.
Like I'm stressed as hell with the stock market. The market was up 500 points at one point today and it ended up being down. Everybody's freaking out. You know, it's crazy, but
I refuse to look. I won't even look.
Yeah, that is a good way to deal with money. You know, in the old days, they used to send investors like an annual statement so that you can just look at it once a year. You know, now you can look at it on your phone and everything, and you're a daily reminder when things are in a bad situation.
No, I good at that. As soon as I see dropping hundreds of points, I detach completely. I won't look because I have a lot of tech stocks and I just won't. I don't know. Eventually they'll come back. It always comes back. It may take a long time, but it always comes back. So
any I don't want to know.
I like to solve the problem by spending it all. Like for me, why have something that I have to worry about? Like if I have it, I spend it. I don't have to worry about it. That's my strategy.
Yeah,
it might be contrary to what. That's my policy.
No, I think you and I agree.
It keeps you from having that abundance of money that makes you worry all the time.
Yeah, yeah. I'm definitely not. I'm not buying. I'm definitely not buying stock shares of Amazon with the money I make doing feature comedy and stuff around the country. Well, one of the things that's concerning, I was going to know if you guys, this is a big story. Japan's Killing Stone splits in two, releasing superstitions. Legend has it that there's an evil spirit trapped in the Sesshoseki Stone. I don't know if that's a bad sign. Do you guys have superstitions, whether it has to do, especially with doing stand-up, going on stage, any things you got to do before you go on? Any superstitions when it comes to comedy and performing, Jeffrey?
I carry a lucky coin with me every day. I carry certain things in my pocket every day. And if I leave the house without them, then I go back to get it sometimes. It's just, I believe in magic. I believe. I don't like to be superstitious. I'm not the kind of guy that who avoids stepping on a crack or something. There was a time that I did, but I was engaging in what they call magical thinking. I've detached from that. You know, I write books on happiness. I have 8 books. So my last 3 books, my first 5 books were about comedy, including the one that I did with Chris Rock on the history of the comic strip. But my last 3 books are about thought. About how to change a thought, and they're inspirational books about happiness. And one of the ways that you torture yourself is by having those kind of thoughts. You know, like I used to think if I left my apartment and I just missed the elevator, that was a bad sign. And then if I pulled out of the garage and the light turned from green to red, I may as well just stay home that day because nothing good could possibly happen. And It's not a healthy way to lead your life. So I've literally changed that, you know, and I incorporate spiritual principles into my life, which allows me to change the way I think. A lot of people are stuck. They don't realize that you can change a thought. You know, I stuttered very badly, which is a part of my history. I stuttered through my 20s and beyond. And I realized one day that I didn't stutter when I was alone. I only stuttered when I was trying to talk to other people. And I worked on myself for years until I developed a cure for stuttering. And now as an avocation, I work with stutterers all over the world to teach them how not to stutter. And a lot of it is learning to control your thoughts and letting go of thoughts that are not valid for you. We're all holding thoughts that are not valid. So my superstitious thoughts are not, they're not helpful to me. They hold me back. And what I learned to do was to release them and let them go, that they're not valid. I still carry that coin with me because I like that. And I carry something that my dad gave me, a little thing that he used to carry because it has sentimental value to me. But as far as the superstitious thoughts, I never knew that they had a killing rock in Japan. I went there, you know, I went there. I didn't see the killing rock. So I don't know about that. But I'll tell you one thing. There's a lot of bowing going on in Japan. And it's the reason I think that most Japanese people are in great shape. They have great abs from all the bowing. It's like doing vertical crunches. When I got on the plane, they were bowing. When I got off the in the hotel, they had women at the elevator that just bow to you when you come in. It's a very polite country. The nicest, kindest people that I ever met were in Japan. I will say that.
Absolutely. Ben, do you have any superstitions? Any things particularly you like to do?
I'm not, but I love the idea of this story. Like, I grew up watching TV, and it wasn't PG. Like, my parents weren't like, you know, this isn't real. So I grew up with this like crazy imagination. You know, like if you just watch Star Trek as a kid, you're like, is that real? Is that not real? nobody was there to tell me it wasn't real, you know? So like, I kind of believed everything is literal growing up. So I have that imagination where like someday I'm going to grow up and be Batman and I can, you know, fight crime. So like, I want secretly, I don't want anyone to be hurt, but I secretly do want to see like something really weird like that happen, like the seeing stone splits. And then we have to have like a real life Ghostbusters kind of thing go on, like our government or whoever. We have to form a task force like, okay, we're dealing with ghosts now. How are we going to do this? Let's watch Ghostbusters. How do we make the little laser light sword things? How do we make those? Like, I want that to happen. Like, what we're really dealing with is just not entertaining to me. Like, life is really boring compared to what I saw on TV in my childhood. So I would love for there to be, like, a real Godzilla. I would love for there to be a real sort of, like, alien invasion. And we got to do, like, an Independence Day kind of thing with Will Smith. You know, I know it's not real, but I want it to be. I hope it is.
Wow, that's, I mean, I'm having a hard time just waking up to the news of what is happening. I can only imagine if there was a Godzilla now, you know. And,
but, like,
you know,
we deal with bad stuff, but I want it to be exciting. You know what I mean? Like, we got to fight Godzilla. That's something I would want to see, just to see how we deal with it. It'd be exciting, you know, real life.
I try and stick to the news from GNN. You remember GNN, right? All the news that's fit to dance to?
Yeah.
That's the news that I like to watch. Man paints replica of the Sistine Chapel with his beard. That's the kind of news I enjoy. To say,
exactly. Cuz
you hardly see beard painting anymore. You know, most guys have the short beards. You can't paint with those beards. You need a long beard that you can dip into the paint. And can you imagine the neck muscles that you have to have to paint a replica of the Sistine Chapel with your beard? Unbelievable. Or, you know, man killed for giving girlfriend a snail instead of an engagement ring. That's the kind of story I wonder.
Imagine.
Could that possibly be true? You know, he read a story that in the Fiji Islands, if a man cares for a woman, he gives her a tiny snail. But that doesn't translate to the United States. This girl was waiting for many years to be engaged, and she shows up for dinner at this fancy restaurant, and he gives her a small snail instead of an engagement ring. And she was so enraged that she killed the snail and then she killed him. You can't give a girl a snail when she wants a ring. A snail doesn't work. Those are the kind of stories I enjoy.
He likes. I had a friend that got in a lot of trouble because the engagement ring he bought his fiancée turned out to be a cubic zirconian. And
yes.
I imagine how mad she got with that.
Very bad. Very bad. Man failed on Spike, still shows up for work on time. I don't know if you remember that story.
Yeah,
he had never been late for work. And then one day he gets impaled on a spike. The paramedics come. They separate the spike. He's nervous he's going to be late for work, but he realizes it's not that uncomfortable. He said he thought he could wait for his day off. The problem was that he said his jacket didn't close properly because most designers don't make a jacket to fit over a spike. Those are the kind of stories. Those are the kind of stories that I wonder about. Is that true? is that real? I don't know.
Well, one unfortunate story. I don't know if who remembers, but the TV show Good Times, or the growing up, J.J. Walker, but Bookman, the actor known as Johnny Brown, otherwise known as Bookman on the TV show Good Times, died this week.
Oh, no.
So, yeah. I thought he must have been old because he looked old in that show. You know what I mean? Well, listen, speaking of the news, it's time for the news as a joke. And this is where we pull up stories from around the world, and it's our job to have fun with it. You know, things are not looking too good, and perhaps Godzilla will come out of the ocean, but nuke-proof doomsday plane spotted flying over Nebraska. Well, I guess if you live in Nebraska, every day is doomsday.
Nebraska. Why is it flying over Nebraska? That's what I want to know.
Have you ever been?
There's places that I mean, who's targeting Nebraska? Why does it have to be there?
And is it only Nebraska? Is it staying over Nebraska? Like when it gets to one end of Nebraska, it flies back to the other end? Yeah. Just keep going over Nebraska. That's it.
Like a Roomba robot.
What makes that? How do you look at that and go, wow, that's one of those nuke-proof planes? Because I don't remember them telling me, if you see one of these and it looks like this, that's a nuke-proof plane. It looks like a plane to me. What makes it nuke-proof? Does it say nuke-proof on the side? Can we get that back up?
There's a big mushroom cloud with a big no sign on it. I don't know if you see it there. It's on the bottom. Wait.
Some 8-year-old posted a picture of a plane and said, this is a nuke-proof plane. And we just believed it. I need more proof.
Well, I wouldn't doubt that with our current media sources, that they'll just put any story up. But hey, who knows? But it's good to know that there's a doomsday plane that could take this thing. A nuclear blast can't knock it out. You know, missiles, it has all kinds of stuff to be defensive. It can't be shot out of the sky. I hope that's the plane they use when I fly next week. I haven't been on a plane in a while.
Me too.
Our next story. Next story. One more time, Ian.
Is it a Southwest plane? Because that's what I normally fly.
I know. I love Southwest. Our next story, Germans tout return of conscription and say military service could do real good for society. Yeah, because we know everybody wants to see a German army coming back.
I thought they weren't allowed to have an army after the war. I thought that was one of the regulations, that they were not allowed to have an army. But now they say they need an army to help Ukraine. So I don't know. I don't see the humor in it, though.
Yeah.
It's too funny. The concept of a German army doesn't... it's not a rib.
I guess there's a style element to this. Like, if they're like, let's have an army, there's stuff going on around us, and there's like a nice person saying it, you know, they're kind of talking to us throughout the whole process. I guess I could be okay with it. But if someone's like yelling a lot and saying, we need an army, you know, like with hand gestures and stuff, I probably have a problem with it.
And a funny mustache. We don't want that guy. We don't want that guy talking about having an army.
Like, if for whatever reason, all the video of him is black and white, I don't want that. You know, it's got to be in color. Okay. No weird facial hair. Then I'm okay with
it. Yeah. That's good. But you know, the idea is that they want to bring a draft. I know in certain parts of Scandinavian countries, you got to serve 2 years, like in Israel, right? If you're an Israeli, you have to spend 2 years in the IDF, right? I think it's a good disciplinary. I think that's what the United States should do. I think once people reach 18, they should spend 2 years in the military. We'd have a lot better society in our own society, I think.
So I agree with you. I never thought of that, but that's very true. I think it would be a good idea. And it gives you a sense of confidence too, to know that you're trained in combat. I think it's great. Every Israeli is trained, you know, and they have the best army in the world probably. And it would be a good idea. Our country is falling apart. In New York City, the crime is so bad. When I was leaving the hospital, I got mugged by a doctor. And I'll tell you, I knew he was a doctor because he wiped my neck off with alcohol before he put the knife to my throat. Horrible. Absolutely horrible. Horrible. No, it's terrible in New York. The crime is really out of control. And we have a new mayor who's going to be just as bad as the old one.
You're not happy with the new mayor yet, Jeffrey?
It looked promising because he was an ex-cop. But right away, he's showing that he's just interested in taking pictures with celebrities and hanging out. And he's not interested. They have no bail laws. So some guy just committed the most horrendous crime that I've ever heard. Just such a disgusting crime that I have a hard time even saying it. He smeared feces on a woman in the subway, and they let him out the next day. You know, he should be neutralized. He should be exterminated on the spot. That woman will never recover from that, what he did to her. No one could ever recover from that kind of filth. And that person will never become a helpful member of society. I can't imagine that he could ever do anything good for society, to stoop that low, to do something to somebody because she rejected his advances. That's what happens on the subways in New York City. I haven't been on a subway in 2 years. You take your life in your hands when you go down there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's a nightmare. It's an absolute nightmare.
Yeah, it's scary. Hey, our next story. Personal trainer dies from caffeine overdose after accidentally drinking the equivalent of 200 cups of coffee. Hey, is that your cup? Okay, I'll drink it. Hey, is that your cup? Okay, I'll drink it. Hey, is that mine? I like my morning cup of coffee. My chiropractor, who's trying to get me to quit coffee, but I love it in the morning. You guys coffee drinkers?
I drank one cup of coffee in my life. My first night of college, I thought I had to drink coffee because I was in college. So I asked my mother to make me a cup of coffee. It's the last coffee I ever had. I don't like it.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I hate it. I hated it. But 200 cups of coffee sounds like one of my stories from Weekly World News. That's crazy. That's insane.
Dan, you drink coffee?
I'm a coffee drinker. Yeah, I drink coffee pretty much all day long. It's essential to my functioning. I'm wildly addicted to caffeine. I don't know if I can do 200 cups, though. I have a feeling like there's some supplements. Like I, for a while, I was trying to get into working out and supplements. And if you peruse the aisles, there's so many like high octane, like pre-workout caffeinated things. And like looking at it, of course, with the physician's eye, I get a little bit worried when I read some of them. It'll be like pre-workout quadruple X, you know, and you look at the ingredients and it's like eight times a cup of coffee, like the amount. So your neck veins are popping and you're like, haven't even gotten to the gym yet. So my guess is somebody like had a mixing error and put like 4 scoops of that in and then went to the gym and had a decent workout before having an arrhythmia.
Yeah, they said here that the ambulance didn't pick him up, but he did run 14 miles to get to the emergency room and unfortunately died in the lobby of the emergency room from a heart attack. I love this story. North Carolina woman fights to keep her fart license plate. I mean, I don't know if I want to be following a car that says fart.
I think this captures the truest sense of the First Amendment. I think this is what the forefathers had in mind, actually. You know, if they were here, they'd be like, we're with this lady. This is what we wanted.
See, and I have the opposite view on that. I think that if a woman is that disgusting, that she shouldn't be allowed to drive. I don't want to face that. I don't talk about that in comedy. I hate people when they do those kind of jokes in comedy. It's the lowest form of comedy that you can do. And if that's all you could think of to try to make people laugh, then you really don't belong in the business. That's my personal opinion. I came up at a time when you had to write clever material, not bathroom material. So there are people who think that's funny. And I think she's the lowest form of human being for a woman to put that on a car. They should take away her license, not only her license plate, but her license as well.
I think she should go all the way. I think she should keep the license plate, but I think she should replace the sound of her car horn with a fart. Like every time she knocks, every time she goes to honk the horn, you know what I mean? If you're going to do it the whole way. I agree with you, though, on the stand-up aspect of this joke, of this story, Jeffrey. I do, you know, I had somebody one time with Tavolino's in my room tell me that they blew the headliner out when this person's closing bit is basically a bathroom humor joke. And I said, you know, any real major closer and headliner is not going to be closing with a bathroom joke. You know,
especially in a restaurant, Dougie, especially when people are eating. Very, very poor taste. And, you know, anybody can call themselves a headliner just because they went last on a show. You know, it's like, it's not a classy act. I don't like it.
Vian, you don't have any fart jokes, right? I want to make sure you're sitting there like, I'm hoping he doesn't. I don't think you have any fart jokes.
No, I don't have any fart jokes.
I think the only fart joke I ever told on stage was, have you ever farted and sneezed at the same time? I'm like, it's funny because everybody in front of you says, God bless you. And the people behind you is whenever you shit your pants. Because if you ever had that happen, you guys are doctors. If that has ever happened, the few times it's ever happened to me, I swear to God, I could have gave birth to a bowling ball. There was so much pressure. There you go. So there was a noise there backing that one up. speaking of disgusting world champ. What's that?
What's that? I said, I think you should go to jail for that. You should go to jail for that joke.
I should at least take my license plate away. Here's something disgusting. A world champion cyclist says racing has gotten so tough that riders have taken to peeing on each other during the races. Right, talk about multitasking.
That's pretty ridiculous. Yeah. It really feels like one of my stories from Weekly World News. Peeing on each other. In order to do that, you have to remove part of your clothing while you're cycling. It just sounds ridiculous to me. I can't even picture how that could happen. Because those shorts they wear, those biking shorts, are really tight. Those things are not easy to pull down. And when you're sitting, how are you peeing on the guy next to you? Would you have like a hose there? I don't know. It's a very strange, I don't even know if I believe that.
There are sports where I just don't think the payoff is worth it. You know, like you remember that story about the lady who had like runner's diarrhea and ran a marathon with diarrhea and she just crapped the whole time. And I'm like, yes, you won your marathon. Congratulations. But you're now forever known as the lady who had diarrhea for 26 miles. Like, is that worth it? Is that the legacy you really want? Like, I would have quit that race and maybe come back the next year, you know? And then, like, you know the guys who do, like, the cross-country skiing and the Winter Olympics, and at the end they have, like, a whole beard of snot. And it's like, yeah. I just wanted to bring glory to my country. You know, like, waving the flag, and you got the gold medal, but you're, like, literally, like, a big ball of mucus. And I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't know that I want you waving my flag, you know? Like, the guy who pisses to win the – I don't know. I think that the punishment is worse than the crime there. That's not the right analogy, but you know what I'm trying
to say. No, I got you. I think what happened, though, is on the bicycles, I think they just pee through the suits, and then through the moving, they may spray things off like that. You know what I'm saying? But it's the time. You just made me remember something. What you were just saying again about the lady. Oh yeah. Here's what I'm worrying. Of course, the lady who shit the whole 26 miles. I'm just guessing that the reason she was in first is nobody wanted to be anybody who was behind her would have quit. I mean, could you imagine you're trying to catch up to her and you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Everybody was slipping on the diarrhea. No, there was like 30 people in the race and she was the only one who won first. We knew that secret. All right, our last story. Man gets harpoon stuck in his penis because he allegedly didn't make his wife dinner. Oh boy. I better go call Grubhub.
Go ahead, Dougie.
No, I was just saying, you know, the thing that amazes me on this story is, you know, first of all, and the guy is from Thailand. It's a man in Thailand feeling some pain. He said he was supposed to make his wife dinner. He didn't. He did something else. And when he got home, she harpooned his penis with a harpoon, which that's pretty impressive. I don't think this woman, if this guy's penis is that big, where it could be severed, like it gets a harpoon stuck in it.
She mistook it for a whale.
I mean,
that's how big it is.
Or
she. That was her excuse.
Or she has incredible aim with a harpoon.
who was the guy in Moby Dick? I don't remember.
Ahab,
Captain Ahab. I'm just impressed. I don't think my penis could be stuck with. I barely could, like maybe like a paperclip or like a. Like a toothpick, I could be harpooned my penis. But for a harpoon, I don't think I'd ever go, oh, my God, there's a harpoon in my penis. You know what I mean? So I'm just saying this woman really needs to, you know, learn how to be a little more patient with her man if he can have a dick that could be harpooned.
Yeah.
Well, That's all we have time for here, ladies and gentlemen, on the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. We've wrapped up another show. I want to thank Dougie, my good friend Jeffrey Gurian, for joining us. And
before we go, I just want to mention my newest book. Okay, I've been waiting to talk about that. It's the third book in my happiness series, and it's called Facing Adversity, Stories of Courage and Inspiration. And it's true stories of people who have overcome amazing difficulties in their lives to achieve happy, meaningful lives. And I'll tell a very quick story that Vienne will really get. A three-year-old boy puts his hand in a machine and it cuts off his hands. Not only his hands, it cut off the thumb of one of his hands besides both his hands. His father happened to be a surgeon, but not that kind of surgeon. And they took him to the hospital and there was no transplant surgeon available. So the father had no choice but to try it. He operated on him for 9 hours and reattached his hands, but they were not functional. And that little boy grew up to be a famous spinal surgeon who heads the spinal surgery clinic in a hospital in Colorado. And that story just blows me away. Not only that, his grandfather was a martial artist and trained him in martial arts to use his hands. And he became an award-winning martial artist and a spinal surgeon. And that's the essence of this book. Stories, amazing stories of people like that who overcome incredible difficulties. It's got 52, it just came out. It's got 52 five-star reviews and it's available on Amazon for anybody who needs some inspiration and some hope. That's what I write about. I write books to give people inspiration and hope because we've all been through so much in the last 2 years and I think it's very needed. Thanks for letting me talk about that for a moment.
Absolutely. Maybe in the next book, we can write about the guy who got a harpoon in his cock. Vian?
That's my book.
And then became a film star.
That's my book, Man Robs Bank with His Chin. That's another of my books. That story is in there.
How about a guy who moved to Japan and learned how to paint with his beard and got in fantastic shape?
that's my next book. You're stealing my idea for my next book. That's great.
Beard painting.
You don't have the long beards in Japan. The beards are kind of thin, very hard to paint. You could paint like maybe a haiku. That would work.
Yeah, but intricate. They paint bridges and trees. Vin, what do you want to plug? I know you got some dates coming up too. Some great dates.
I'm going to be in Minnesota, at suburb of Minnesota, at a club called Gutty's this weekend. And then I'm at the World Comedy Expo, first ever World Comedy Expo in Chicago. We'll be at the Laugh Factory and Second City, end of March. So those are big dates coming up for me. Come catch me if you can.
There you go.
That's great.
Nice. And I'm going to be in Pensacola this Friday and Saturday night. Go to my website, Q Sticks in Pensacola. Just Google Dougie Almeida in Panama City. I said Pensacola? Sorry, Panama City this weekend, Friday and Saturday night in Panama City. Go to DougieAlmeida.com for dates. And hey, guys, thanks so much for joining me today. God bless. And, you know, we'll see you soon, both you guys. And for everybody else, we'll be back with a show next week. I'm going to be doing some traveling, but I'm still going to work it out to get in here and do some shows for you folks and try to bring some happiness to you. Don't forget to subscribe to us on our YouTube channel. Please do so. We want to build that up. And if you're not already watching us on our fan page on Facebook, please subscribe, like the page, and please share the video with your friends if you had a good time and enjoyed it. And we are on Instagram. Follow us there and on Twitter at Wake Up Dougie. And follow me at Dougie Dangerous. All the stuff you've seen. I don't want to repeat it. Anyway, guys, God bless. Stay well. Let's all pray for the folks in Ukraine and that we get through this horrible situation and we get back to some normal living. Thank God. God bless. See you next time.